Welcome everyone to the Melbourne City Council Future Melbourne Committee meeting number one. It's Tuesday the 17th of November 2020. It is 5:30 p.m. and we are kicking off for our first meeting. I welcome councillors and management and members of the public who are attending this evening's meeting virtually. Welcome to the City of Melbourne. The City of Melbourne respectfully acknowledges the traditional custodians of the land, the Bunurong, Boonwurrung and the Wurundjeri Woiwurrung people of the Eastern Kulin Nation, and we pay our respect to their elders past, present and emerging. We are committed to our reconciliation journey because at its heart, reconciliation is about strengthening relationships between Aboriginal and non-Aboriginal peoples. And we know that that is for the benefit of all Victorians. I'd like to take the opportunity now to acknowledge the contribution of former councillors here at the City of Melbourne and to thank them for their service. At the close of the last term, we were able to acknowledge retiring councillors. We didn't have the same opportunity to acknowledge councillors who were running for re-election. Aaron Wood, Beverly Pinder and Jackie Watts, thank you for your contribution for your service to the City of Melbourne. Of course, I can welcome all of our returning and new councillors. Thank you for putting your hand up and welcome to the City of Melbourne for this, our first Future Melbourne Committee meeting. It's fantastic to see you. And thank you all in advance for your hard work and service over the next 4 years. As part of our efforts to contain the spread of COVID-19 and pursuant to the provisions of sections 394 and 394 of the Local Government Act 2020, council and committee meetings will be held virtually until further notice. During the period 1 May 2020 to 26 April 2021, councils do not need to provide for members of the public to physically attend our meetings. We can satisfy the public attendance test by providing access to live streaming as we are this evening. This meeting's live streaming and audio and video recording will be published on Council's website by close of business tomorrow. The unconfirmed minutes of this meeting will also be available from the City of Melbourne's website as soon as practicable. I request now councillors and anyone attending, if you could turn your mobile phones to off or silent, that would be appreciated. The agenda this evening comprises 5 reports from management. No apologies have been received this evening. I advise members of the committee and the public that where the committee makes a decision on the basis of fewer than 6 members voting in favour of it, the decision may be referred by a councillor to council for decision. We're up to item 2, which is disclosure of conflicts of interest. If any councillor has either a general or material conflict of interest as defined in the Local Government Act 2020 in relation to a matter to be considered by the committee this evening, please disclose the type and nature of your conflict of interest prior to the consideration of that item. Agenda item 3, which is confirmation of minutes of the previous meeting. I'm calling on a councillor to move a resolution adopting the minutes of open meeting number 86 held on 13 October 2020, moved by the Deputy Lord Mayor, seconded by Councillor Leppett. I'm now putting the motion to the vote. All those in favour of those minutes, please raise your hands. I've got Councillor Griffiths, Councillor Hakim, Councillor Deutsch, Councillor Chang, Councillor Campbell, Councillor Rees, Councillor Leppett, Councillor Louie, Councillor Lulu, and Councillor Capp. Thank you. All those against the motion, all those abstaining the motion, Councillor Ball, thank you very much. The majority in favour, so I declare that motion carried. Thank you. I'm asking Councillor, are there any matters arising from the minutes of the previous meeting that you'd like to discuss at this point? No, thank you very much. Now, the following submissions have been received in accordance with the Council's governance rules, and please bear with me as we read out these submissions and the speakers for this evening. In relation to Agenda Item 6.1, which is Planning Permit Application TP-2009-1007/A, Shop 6 and Shop 7, 148 to 178 Albert Street and 412 to 442 Victoria Parade, East Melbourne, Vic 3002, which is the Tribeca Victoria Brewery site. We have items of correspondence from Stuart McLaren, Greg Poynton. In relation to Agenda Item 6.2, Planning Permit Application TP-2020-225, which is 388 to 390 Bourke Street, Melbourne, we've had requests to speak from Michael Slater, Mia Xiong, Stephanie McDonald, Kate Buckley, Alison Baker, Eric Zhang, Sophie Sineris, Kim Reading, Jackie McKinnon, Alison Scott, Wendy Tinkler, Ben Williamson, Mitchell Belden from Plan Urban, and Matt Newman from One by One. We have received over 20 items of correspondence in relation to this item. In relation to Agenda Item 6.3, which is the economic recovery to support the critical Christmas trade, we've had items of correspondence from Matthew Townsend and Owen Bentley. In relation to Agenda Item 6.5, which is COVID-19 recovery importance of transport options, we've had a request to speak from Stuart Norman, CEO, Parking Australia. We've also had items of correspondence received from Jason Clark, Simon Coop, Alexander Lug, Claudia Mark, Oscar Jackson, Nicholas Dow, Emily Smythe, Stella Gold, and Stuart Norman, CEO, Parking Australia. I'm advising submitters that you will be invited to address the committee at the time that the relevant agenda item is considered. You will have 3 minutes to address the committee. It is the intention of the committee to adhere to this 3-minute time limit, and to assist you, you will... Councillors, we're going to need to pause because we've lost our live streaming capacity. So if we could do a motion. Right. We're back, so no need for a motion. I'm going to start from any advice on where we left off, team? From this item? Back to reading out the submissions and correspondence? Yes, thank you. All right, please bear with me while we read out the submissions that have been received in relation to the meeting this evening. And for everybody that is live streaming, apologies, we had a technical issue and we've gone right back to the start of this item, so you haven't missed anything. In relation to Agenda Item 6.1, which is Planning Permit Application TP-2009-1007/A, Shop 6 and Shop 7, 148 to 178 Albert Street and 412 to 442 Victoria Parade, East Melbourne, Vic 3002, which is the Tribeca Victoria Brewery site, we have items of correspondence from Stuart McLaren and Greg Poynton. In relation to Agenda Item 6.2, which is Planning Permit Application TP-2020-225, which is 388 to 390 Bourke Street, Melbourne, we have requests to speak from Michael Slater, Mia Xiong, Stephanie McDonald, Kate Buckley, Alison Baker, Eric Zhang, Sophie Sinaharis, Kim Reading, Jackie McKinnon, Alison Scott, Wendy Tinkler, Ben Williamson, Mitchell Belden, who is from Plan Urban, and Matt Newman, who's from One by One. We've received more than 20 items of correspondence for this matter. In relation to Agenda Item 6.3, which is economic recovery to support the critical Christmas trade, we've received items of correspondence from Matthew Townsend and Owen Bentley. In relation to agenda item 6.5, which is COVID-19 recovery importance of transport options, we've had a request to speak from Stuart Norman, CEO Parking Australia, and we've had items of correspondence from Jason Clark, Simon Coop, Alexander Lugg, Claudia Mark, Oscar Jackson, Nicola Stow, Emily Smythe, Stella Gold and Stuart Norman. I'm advising submitters that you will be invited to address the committee at the time the relevant agenda item is considered. You will have 3 minutes to address the committee, and it is our intention to adhere to the 3-minute time limit. To assist you, please refer to the counter which will appear on your screen or your device for a countdown. It starts when you start speaking, and a bell will ring at the completion of 2 minutes to let you know that you have 1 minute remaining, and then another bell will sound at the end of your 3 minutes. If you could please finalise your presentation at that time, that would be appreciated. Now, in accordance with the Council's governance rules, a 15-minute period will be provided at the beginning and at the end of this meeting for members of the public to be able to ask questions. To enable the public to continue to participate in future Melbourne Committee meetings, members of the public are able to submit a question in writing or register to ask a question via a live audio link or phone. I can advise the committee that as at 10 a.m. today, we'd received 4 written public questions that have been received. I note I'm going to read out these questions verbatim, and therefore I do not attest to the veracity or the factual nature of the statements or questions that have been put. I'm reading them verbatim. The first question is from Chris Thrum, and he says, one example of the acute division in society concerning the appropriateness of the strict draconian measures that were taken to counter the virus was the Unlock the Hospitality movement that had the full support of the leading lights of Melbourne's hospitality industry. What is the City of Melbourne doing to help support hospitality the hospitality industry, and in a polarised political climate, can the City of Melbourne advocate for the workers and businesses to return to the city? I'm reading out a response that's been provided by Andrew Weir, who is our Director of Economic Development and International. It reads, the City of Melbourne acknowledges that hospitality is one of the industry sectors most impacted by COVID-19. The city has worked with the sector and the state government to explore pathways to reopening, including through advocacy for safe indoor dining as part of a 10-point plan. 203 outdoor dining parklets have been approved to date, with 74 delivered and more than 1,300 extended outdoor dining renewals and new permits have been approved to date. In partnership with the Victorian Government, reactivation grants worth $10 million have been awarded to more than 1,000 hospitality businesses, and promotion of hospitality is a central feature of the city's activation program in the months ahead. Question 2 is also from Chris Thrum. Melbourne is the music capital of Australia. Melbourne musos appreciate the support the City of Melbourne gives to the music industry. Melbourne's music industry needs continued support from the City of Melbourne. What measures can the City of Melbourne take to further support the music industry, and what is the status of Melbourne Music Week? I'm going to read out a response from Andrew Weir, who is our Director of Economic Development and International. The City of Melbourne is continuing to support the local music industry through the implementation of the Music Plan 2018 to 2021 and the COVID Recovery and Reactivation Plan. The city has remained engaged with the industry during COVID-19 to understand the impact of the restrictions on the sector, and we have also responded through a range of programs, including quick response arts grants, business activation, reactivation funding, and new busking programs. Restrictions have meant that Melbourne Music Week cannot go ahead in November, So Melbourne Music Week Extended will take place from 9 December to 28 February and will present a three-month program to support the local music industry as it recovers after months of lockdown. Question three is also from Chris Thrum. There was great distress in the community in Melbourne at the sheer disrespect that was shown when important sacred ceremonial trees were cut down for a new road in Jab Warung country, the Western Districts. People are looking for creative, innovative leadership like when Gough Whitlam met and had a conversation with Vincent Lingari. Is the City of Melbourne aware of this sentiment, and is the City of Melbourne committed to its Reconciliation Action Plan? I'm reading out a response that has been provided by Hans Bockland, our Director of Aboriginal Melbourne. Firstly, the City of Melbourne acknowledges and pays respect to the Elders past, present and emerging of the Jab Warung country. Though Jab Warung country is outside the local government area of the City of Melbourne, we are committed to our journey of reconciliation with First Nations people. As part of the City of Melbourne's reconciliation journey, we recognise the unique place of Aboriginal people in our shared place and the enduring value of their culture to the City of Melbourne. We recognise as traditional owners that they have never ceded their sovereignty to this land. We acknowledge and respect the customs and traditions of Aboriginal peoples and their special relationship with the land, waterways and sea. We acknowledge the right of Aboriginal peoples to live according to their own values and their customs. For reconciliation to be meaningful, Victorian traditional owners, community and the state need to work together to ensure that traditional owners, as part of their self-determination, play a lead role in managing and protecting land, natural resources and cultural heritage. Reconciliation for the City of Melbourne is premised upon a relationship, one of equal partnership, founded on mutual respect and a commitment to justice and equality for all. And that is for all Aboriginal Victorians and promoting reconciliation between Aboriginal and non-Aboriginal Victorians. In conclusion, the City of Melbourne recognises that we are not at the end of our reconciliation journey, and though past injustices cannot be undone, we need to continue to consult and cooperate in good faith with First Nations peoples as we collectively endeavour to take each step forward on a pathway toward meaningful reconciliation for the benefit of all Victorians. Chris, thank you for your interest, your diligence and your questions. We have a question from Mary Lou Howie. And Mary Lou's question goes like this, which again is verbatim and not something that I attest to the factual nature of. My question relates to agenda point 6.3, specifically Christmas trade and economic recovery. I note initiatives cited in point 5, all commendable initiatives, but obviously of particular interest to the Friends of Queen Victoria Market is point 7, the suggestion of a valuable partnership with QVM for a promotional competition offering a generous $100,000 QVM gift vouchers, again commendable, but does this go far enough? Quite rightly, the City of Melbourne has identified the necessity of boosting foot traffic. My questions are, will the City of Melbourne consider extending the commendable Christmas proactivity to QVM, which is not only owned by the City of Melbourne, but is also located in the CBD, yet it appears to be overlooked? Could the City of Melbourne consider mounting a smaller version of the popular Epicure gingerbread exhibition at QVM? It is food after all. We must acknowledge, well, I'm going to actually say Mary Lou is stating that, in her opinion, the QVM management is consumed by the renewal and COVID and apparently have neither the expertise, the imagination or the budget, open bracket, we are told, to support Christmas. The need for additional promotional support has never been greater. I'm reading out a response to the question provided by Louise Scott, who is our Director of Tourism and Events. The City of Melbourne is working closely with QVM Management to promote a range of festive initiatives planned by QVM Management as part of the Christmas Festival program. The festive activations led by QVM Management have traditionally attracted thousands to the market during the build-up and lead-up to Christmas. And those activations are to experience both the festive atmosphere and, of course, to promote the wide range of products on offer. Those activations have included previously decorations, special offers and promotional activities. This year's activities include a festive food truck event, cooking demonstrations, decorations across the market and visits from Santa. The Christmas Festival marketing campaign encourages visitation to the City of Melbourne and the market throughout the festive season. This year, items for sale at the market will be included in our gift finder, and events will be included in social media, marketing campaigns, and in the What's On listings. Thank you, Mary Lou. We're up to item six, councillors, and at this point I'm calling on the Deputy Lord Mayor Nicholas Rees to assume the role of chair of the meeting in relation to the planning portfolio. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Lord Mayor. There are two reports from management for consideration under the planning portfolio this evening. First of those is agenda item 6.1, planning permit application TP 2009-1007/A, shop 6 and 7, 148-178 Albert Street, and 412 to 442 Victoria Parade, East Melbourne, Victoria 3002, popularly known as Tribeca Victoria Brewery site. Checking to see if any councillors have a declaration or conflict on this, and I can see the answer to that is no. Would councillors like a presentation on this item? I'm looking around and I'll take that also as a no. If that is the case, I will now direct councillors to the screen where I would like to move a alternative motion. And I look to move that. I'm looking for a seconder. Thank you, Councillor Leppett. I'll now speak briefly in favour of this motion. What we're considering here is some changes to the operation of a convenience restaurant in the Tribeca apartments complex. It's essentially the changes that are requested involve an extension of trading hours from 9 to 11 p.m., the allowance of the sale of packaged liquor, and then thirdly, the allowance for background live music to be played. It is notable that we've had more than 38 objections to this application, which certainly does get councillors' attention, and we've had 9 submissions in support. The motion that is before us this evening does support the application, but it does include some very important conditions. Those conditions relate to limiting the maximum number of people at the convenience restaurant. They also contain some important restrictions around the sale of liquor only being permitted to 9 p.m, even though the venue itself can trade through to 11 p.m, and importantly around the application for live background music. There are some important conditions there that limit the background music to certain sound levels, to solo artists, that the music is not to be amplified, and not designed to draw a crowd, and they must, of course, comply with EPA and other sound management restrictions. I also note that there's an additional clause which has been added here in addition to the conditions which have been drafted by officers, and that is a requirement that management write to the owner and the operator of this premises, reminding them of their obligations to meet the requirements of the Melbourne Planning Scheme and the relevant planning permit applying to the land. And secondly, that we will arrange for two proactive inspections of the premises within the first 3 months of the applicant acting on this amended permit, should it ultimately be granted. And of course, I do note we do have very vigilant officers here at the City of Melbourne, so those first two proactive visits won't be the end of it if necessary. And look, that's us as councillors, I guess, responding to the sensitivities around the changed use on this site. I did read the many submissions that we did receive, and I'm sympathetic to the concerns that have been raised. At the end of the day, this is a mixed-use zone. What's been applied for here is consistent with what is envisaged under the Melbourne Planning Scheme in this site, and I think with these conditions in place, we can preserve amenity at the Tribeca apartment block and, in fact, hopefully improve living for all who do live there. Councillor Leppard.
Thank you, Chair. I agree. This is one of a number of tenancies in a genuinely mixed-use area, and it's unreasonable to deny to this business, like any business, reasonable hours of operation, and this is in spite of the large number of objections, actually a relatively straightforward town planning matter. However, I acknowledge that number of objections. These are very real concerns, and the care that's gone into the conditions, I think, goes a long way towards acknowledging the extent of concern. However, this is a legitimate business doing legitimate work, and there's no reason to deny the reasonable operations of that business, like any other business in the city. These aren't extraordinary hours, and the conditions that are being applied are very much fair. I think that raising the two issues in the resolution is also reasonable. I will point out that this is the sort of thing that we would be doing anyway, and so it's fine to be noting that our enforcement team will be taking proactive steps in acknowledgement of the significance of the application and the concern of locals. I also acknowledge that it would be unusual for us to set any precedent here and get into the realm of adding planning enforcement type additions to planning matters at future meetings. It's unusual for us to do this, but I think given it's something that would happen anyway, and as a nod to the very real concerns of objectors, it's fine to do it in this case. And so I commend the addition and that of the work of our officers and councillors in coming to this updated version of the motion. So I commend the planning permit and the resolution.
Thank you, Councillor Leppard. Are there any other speakers for or against the motion? I'm seeing none, so in that case I will put the motion to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hands. I'm declaring that carried unanimously. The next agenda item before us is agenda item 6.2 for planning application TP-2020-225 for the property 388 to 390 Bourke Street, Melbourne. Would councillors like a presentation in relation to this item? Looking around, I'm taking that as a no. In that case, I will note that we have had a large number of people who have expressed a wish to present to us this evening, and I'll now call on The first of those, Michael Slater, who requested the opportunity to address the committee in relation to this matter, to speak for no more than 3 minutes. Welcome to Town Hall virtually, Michael.
Thank you, Deputy Lord Mayor. I am a signatory to the lease on level 5 of 388 Bourke Street, and I'm also responsible for the occupational health and safety and security of people who attend and work on this floor. I have a number of concerns with this proposal. Given the extremely limited access to this building, I consider that the addition of a bar of this size puts other users of the building at the risk, at extreme risk in the event of a required evacuation. Both the internal stairs and the fire escapes are narrow and they're steep. It's questionable that a person under the influence of alcohol could navigate this evacuation route without being of a danger to themselves and others. I ask the committee to check whether an independent assessment of the building has been done, as I'm most certain that if it was done, it would raise serious questions. Secondly, we have a responsibility to provide facilities free of the risk of sexual harassment and physical violence. I ask the committee to consider how this can be achieved when the general public have to share a single lift and a confined common area with intoxicated patrons. Licensed premises are unpredictable and they're volatile, and the potential for an incident under these circumstances is very high and an unacceptable risk in our occupational health and safety plan. Thirdly, the planner's report asserts that these issues are addressed in the venue management plan. Nothing in this plan ensures the separations of members of the public from intoxicated patrons. Further, the plan has a history of failures over the past 2 years where people have been put at risk. Because of the design and the age of the building, no building management plan can adequately satisfy our objections, our obligation to provide a safe and secure facility. We have a duty of care to ensure people's personal safety, and this proposal prevents us from carrying out that duty. Looking practically at the proposal and at the building, it seems obvious that there are serious concerns, and I ask the committee to please reject the application for the permit because of these reasons. Thank you, Deputy Lord Mayor.
Thank you very much, Michael. And given we have a large number of submitters this evening, please know that we're taking notes of all the points that are being made, and we will respond to them in bulk at the conclusion of the presentations. I now call on Shengen Mia Jiong to speak for no more than 3 minutes. Welcome to Town Hall virtually.
Hi, I'm from level 4388 Bourke Street. I'm the business owner and my business is a So I have two main concerns. The first one is the personal safety and the second one is the property safety. And all my staff and most of my clients are young girls. So I'm worried if there is a public bar in the building, how can I ensure the safety for my staff and my clients? Can you imagine that a young girl finish her facial and waiting for the lift to go home, and when the lift opened, there is a drunk or more than one drunk people in the lift. What's her feeling? And I guess it's not a good experience, right? And she may tell her friends or even write a comment on the Google Map. Then who is responsible for the damage to our reputation? And same thing may happen to my staff. And I know the bar cannot like give us 100% guarantee that the safety for all other tenants. So I want to ask, what if something happened, then who responsible for that and who pay for our loss? And you must know that if the sexual asshole or bully happened, that will be a disaster for all of our, for all the tenants in the building. So no one want to take this risk. And second of my concern is the property safety. Our entry door is a glass door, so it's very easy to break. And we also have many expensive machines inside property. And as the person mentioned before, in this building, the lift and the stairs are open to everyone. That means once a person gets into the building, and this person can go to all the level. So how can the bar ensure that their customer only go to level 8? And if a drunk man coming down and break our glass door. So again, I don't want to take the risk, and I don't think this building is suitable for running a public bar. And that's all I want to talk today. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that, Mia. I now call on Stephanie McDonald to speak for no more than 3 minutes. Welcome to Town Hall, Stephanie.
Thank you, Deputy Lord Mayor. Good evening, everyone. I have attended social and public events on level 5 of 388 to 390 Bourke Street for a number of years. Many of these events are family oriented, and there are a lot of young children that come along and enjoy them. As a primary school teacher, I am concerned about the safety issues a public bar and high consumption of alcohol will present in the building, and I was surprised when I read the report that the venue management plan did not address this duty of care matter. Because of this reason, I would like the public bar not to go ahead. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that, Stephanie. I now call on Kate Buckley to speak for no more than 3 minutes. Welcome to Town Hall virtually, Kate.
Thank you, Deputy Lord Mayor, and good afternoon and evening to the Future Melbourne Committee. Look, I'd like to start, first of all, by addressing the matter that every tenant on each floor is unanimously opposed to the establishment of a public bar. And each tenant on each floor is an independent creative enterprise and includes individuals who've worked hard over a number of years to establish themselves and their operation in Bourke Street. And I feel very strongly that this is worthy of some sort of adequate acknowledgement. And these are businesses who have invested considerable money and financed community services, training, education and cultural activities. It doesn't make any sense to grant a permit to one individual who wants to run a public bar and to elevate his interests above the legitimate concerns of seven floors of tenants, all who oppose a permit being granted. A public bar may benefit that business, but it does not extend its benefit beyond that. Other businesses in the building have a much broader positive impact on the Melbourne community. And I'd also like to address a couple of issues that Richard Cherry's report raised. The first is where he says the bar replaces an existing function space at the premises and is generally consistent with the hours of operation. Well, technically this is true, but in reality, especially in the first 18 months, there were many weeks where there was only maybe one function a fortnight. What the various tenants on each floor are objecting to is, in fact, the damaging and detrimental effect that a public bar running 7 days a week during the day and during the evening would have on their day-to-day runnings. And finally, I'd like a question answered from the Future Melbourne Committee, which is that I've also become aware that there is a proposal for a bar to operate on the rooftop of the OPSM building at 384 to 386 Bourke Street. Does the council intend this sector to be turned into a hospitality precinct? And that is the finish of my question. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Kate. I now call on Alison Baker to speak for no more than 3 minutes. Welcome to Town Hall virtually, Alison.
Thank you, Deputy Lord Mayor, and good evening, councillors and others in attendance. And thank you for the opportunity to highlight my concerns regarding this permit application. Particularly in these unprecedented times that COVID-19 has created, I do fully understand and support the council's aim to support different types of businesses that contribute to the character of vibrancy and economic strength around the City of Melbourne. While licensed premises are often a good option, they're not appropriate in every scenario. And from my perspective, I think this is one of those situations. There are two key points that I would like to emphasise and request that you consider in assessing this application and reviewing the recommendation report. Firstly, while the assessment report references the application of Melbourne planning documentation, from my perspective, it doesn't appear to address the holistic intent in these documents. I've reviewed the council plan 2017-2020, which I actually thought was fantastic, and the municipal strategic statement, both which reflect a very comprehensive approach to planning. I'm quoting directly from the MSS clause 2108-1, referenced in the recommendation report. I note the following with respect to the economic development of retail business. Quote, a proliferation of eating and entertainment uses should not undermine the character and range of services offered in these local centres. This reference seems to contradict the case that many of the objections in section 14 of the report aren't the remit of planning. While I recognise the above refers to an area or centre rather than a building, I would have thought that assessing the impact of eating and entertainment venues in its immediate surroundings is appropriate. And all of the other businesses, as a number of people have said, in the building have indicated that the bar would be detrimental to their businesses. My second point then relates to numerous safety and security concerns that have been identified with operating this public bar, taking into account the characteristics of the building itself. As a parent, mentor, coach of young professional women and students, I think the onus is on each and every one of us to take that shared responsibility for creating safe and secure environments for children, young women, and our international student population wherever we can. As the council panel is also focused on bringing children, families, and educational facilities into the city, I think it's important that we can create those alternative spaces as well to support this priority. Again, I reference the recent integration of the municipal health and wellbeing plan into the council plan, and it very much emphasises the importance of creating an environment that feels safe and minimises harm, including from alcohol and drug use and violence against women and children. So in summary, I appeal to each of you to consider the City of Melbourne's commitment to a diverse, vibrant and safe environment in our city, as outlined in the planning documentation, and in this instance, reverse the recommendation to grant a permit for this public bar. Thank you very much, and I appreciate the opportunity.
And thank you, Alison, for the time and effort you put into presenting to us this evening. I now call on Eric Zhang to speak for no more than 3 minutes. Welcome to Town Hall, Eric.
Thank you very much, Deputy Lord Mayor. My name is Eric, and I'm the CEO of Australian Institute of Language. We occupy two floors, level 2 and level 6, at 388 Bourke Street, Melbourne. And I would like to express our strong objection to the application for a permit to run the public bar on level 8. Our institution is a registered training organisation, as well as a cry course provider. And we've been tenants at 388 Bourke Street for more than about 10 years. And 80% of our students are international students. And also, our main reason, I strongly object to this application for the three major reasons. The first one, the safety of our clients, as most of them are international students and school children. But given that we have scheduled classes at evenings from 6 o'clock to 9 o'clock, before COVID, and we will resume classes after COVID as well. And IELTS test on evenings from 5 p.m. to 9 p.m., because we are one of the three official IELTS test centers in Victoria. And our students and the test takers may have to share the lift and stairwells with all other tenants to get into and get out of the building. So people on premise, you know, have alcohol may impose great risk and a potential danger to our clients. That's our great concern. The second one is the noise and the amplified music, because our business, especially our IELTS testing service located on level 6, requires a quiet testing environment. So everybody knows this old building with wooden concrete floors, noise and the loud music would easily get through to other floors and ultimately interrupt and disrupt our IELTS test takers. So I couldn't even imagine that we would receive loads of noise complaints from our test takers if a permit was given to run a public bar upstairs. And the third one, they just not appropriate for, you know, to have a public bar inside this building. We being as an education provider requires a clean, safe, quiet and a well-managed venue to deliver our courses, conduct our coaching programs, and hold our IELTS test. Because the presence of the alcohol and people gathering in front of the building and the noise made would definitely downgrade the current harmonious environment and ultimately generate a lot of issues. That's all my concerns. I sincerely wish the council could take these matters into consideration prior to making a decision. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Eric, for taking the time to present to us this evening. I now call on Sophie Sinahiris to speak for no more than 3 minutes. Welcome to Town Hall, Sophie.
Thank you, Deputy Lord Mayor, and good evening, councillors. I'm part of a team of people operating in the building representing level 3 and 5 at 388 Bourke Street. We got together approximately 2.5 years ago to manage the effect of the events being held at level 8, which involved the consumption of alcohol. And our purpose was to minimise any detrimental effect of these events on the running of our own events and on our staff, our volunteers, and also our clientele. And I'd like to give you an accurate description on how things have actually played out, as there may be some confusion as to the reality of what happens when events take place. And although all parties have the best intention where alcohol consumption is involved, it has proved difficult to accommodate these style of events without upset to our normal routine. And we had to accommodate these events by changing or cancelling the dates and times of our classes and training sessions on occasion, so that our clients got the full benefit of coming to those classes. Changing or cancelling dates and times of our activities and social events so as not to have our guests be at risk of encountering intoxicated patrons from the 8th floor. We're monitoring the times our patrons came and went from the building, so women and children were not encountering patrons who had consumed alcohol. We had to wait in order to make sure we ended the lift when it was empty for our own safety. We provided our own in-house security to escort women, children and families from the building to their transport. And the number of events had increased, obviously, during Christmas times, but were quite sporadic during the rest of the year, especially over winter. However, when an event was taking place, there were some issues that we had encountered. For example, we found intoxicated patrons in the stairwell on some occasions, patrons walking down the stairs with alcohol and glasses and they were unsupervised. One patron was even found urinating on level 1 and the security guard had to leave his post to handle the situation. Patrons and security guards were smoking at the front of the building on the footpath, which is obviously not a good look for us. Patrons walking up the stairs unsupervised because they didn't want to wait for the lift. So we had always attempted to handle these issues that had risen with goodwill and respect and always reported what we saw to the 8th level management. But the emergence of a public bar in the building will magnify all of these issues to an impractical and impossible level. And finally, we were told from the very beginning that the 8th floor was only going to be an event space, and we all tried to accommodate them on that premise, even though it was of great inconvenience to all. And our generosity has also been taken advantage of, and our freedom and right to move freely to and from our building and operate to the best of our capacity has been threatened and obviously stunted. So that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Sophie, for that. Just a reminder to all our presenters, please speak for no more than 3 minutes. You'll get a warning bell after 2. I now call on Kim Reading to speak for no more than 3 minutes. Welcome to Town Hall, Kim.
Thank you and good afternoon, everyone, councillors. My name is Kim Redding and I'm the current president of the Kenja Melbourne Social, Cultural and Sporting Association, and we've been a resident at level 5 at 388 Bourke Street for more than 35 years. We are a family-friendly organisation and we've been part of the Melbourne community here for more than 35 years. You may have seen us in the Moomba Parade in years gone by and advanced down in Federation Square. The activities that we hold promote inclusiveness for people of all abilities and ages, and we also promote a lifestyle free from drug and alcohol. Our objection today is simply that it will be impossible for us to operate and provide the alcohol-free environment which our community members ask for. The overwhelming concern of our membership is that their families are safe and separate from bar patrons. We often hold activities after school hours. So you can imagine, for example, if there's a happy hour in the bar upstairs at 5 p.m. and we're trying to chaperone in families into the building at the same time, you can imagine the sort of chaos that might be like. My other concern relates strongly to the effects of alcohol abuse and its negative impact on mental health more broadly in society. Throughout my professional career in the health sector, I've witnessed firsthand what can happen when people have had too much to drink and get punchy and aggressive. And of course, I'm sure you're all aware about the link between alcohol and mental health issues. According to your own municipal plan, nearly half Melbourne residents are at risk of alcohol-related injury in the short term. And I do understand that you have a great initiatives in place to reduce these numbers, but I'm not sure how opening a bar at this particular address is one of them. Don't get me wrong, there is absolutely a place in the city for bars and clubs. However, this section of Bourke Street is one of the few streets in Melbourne that do not have any at all. And also, this is an area that is still recovering from the horrific incident of January 2017. People were killed right outside our doorstep, and we still remember the places on the footpath where people lost their lives. Approving a public bar amidst a well-established business community just up from the Meyer windows is just simply not appropriate. We do understand your urgency in encouraging the business community to get back on its feet amid the current pandemic, but we also urge you to think beyond the needs of one business alone. I'm appealing to you today, councillors, not just as endorsers of planning permits, but as people who encourage diversity, as parents, and as representatives of all things that Melbourne can be. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Kim, for taking the time to present to us this evening. It was excellent. I now call on Jackie McKinnon to speak for no more than 3 minutes. Welcome, Jackie.
Thank you. Thank you, Deputy Lord Mayor, and hello, everyone. I would like to appeal to the councillors at this meeting to prevent the planning permit regarding this public bar from going ahead. The application ticks the boxes relevant to the relatively narrow planning requirements, but completely ignores and washes its hands of the destruction and hurt this will cause all the other vulnerable businesses in the building who are recovering from the effects of the COVID-19 pandemic. I would urgently ask you to consider the very real concerns they voiced by these seven other tenants and their clients, and I would especially like to appeal to those of you for whom your portfolio is directly linked to some of these concerns. For example, number one, the International Melbourne portfolio, which has in its brief the care of international students, would, I think, concern itself with the direct downgrading of the environment of the language school on level 6 and level 2. This school has been operating in a quiet and harmonious environment, but will now have students anxious to enter the building for their IELTS exams because they may encounter rowdy bar patrons who are not responsible for their actions. The other portfolio is the People Melbourne portfolio, which covers the health and safety of women and children. As a woman, I have been happily attending training in this building for over 10 years. If this bar goes ahead, I will have to cease going to my training as I will no longer feel comfortable or safe in the confined corridors, lift and stairwells if they are full of bar patrons who have been drinking at a popular and successful bar upstairs on level 8. The presence of numerous security guards or bouncers would also diminish my sense of well-being. The granting of the permit would adversely affect the lives and livelihoods of many people, including 7 out of the 8 tenants at 388 Bourke Street. One person gains and everyone else seems to lose. This is neither fair nor reasonable. Please reject this permit application. Thank you. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, Jackie. I now call on Alison Scott to speak for no more than 3 minutes. Welcome, Alison.
Thank you, Deputy Lord Mayor, and hello, councillors. I am a consultant operating out of 388 Bourke Street, and thank you for the opportunity to back up my submission. I want to stress the practical complications in this situation, which may not be evident to people who don't actually go into the building. I'm just highlighting some key points. There is only one single entrance to this building at ground level. Everyone enters and exits through that one entrance. Of particular concern is the narrow corridor from the front door to the lift. The small shared lift, which measures 1.6 metres by 1.2 metres approximately. The stairs are narrow, steep and slippery, and people drinking alcohol can be falling down those stairs. patrons of the Stolen Gem coming and going through the stairwell and lift at irregular times with no security on those floors. In the venue management plan, there was a suggestion of locking the lift. My suggestion is locking the lift is not a viable option. Patrons who have consumed alcohol creates a potential risk and danger to other clients using the building. There is very clear evidence that when alcohol is consumed, there is increased incidences of violence and sexual assault. Some businesses operate over two floors and so require a great deal of movement between the two floors via the lift and the stairs, and their ability to operate freely will be under threat. People smoking and an overflow of clientele for the bar accumulating on the footpath out front of the building is highly likely given the promotion of these types of venues. There is no proposal of management of bar patrons during daytime hours prior to 6 p.m. access. The amount of attention the Stolen Gem has put on security, including the emergency telephone numbers provided to other building users, acknowledges the Stolen Gem's concern and awareness about potential antisocial, violent, and dangerous behaviour. These references also confirm that Stolen Gem acknowledges that a public bar will undoubtedly result in unruly clientele. I ask the committee to reject the permit for a public bar. Thank you for listening.
Thank you very much, Alison. I now call on Wendy Tinkler to speak for no more than 3 minutes. Welcome to Town Hall, Wendy.
Thank you very much, Deputy Lord Mayor, and hello, councillors. Many of my concerns have been covered by the previous speakers, so I'm going to cut straight to the chase. I run a business in 388 Bourke Street, which I have done for 35 years. Coexistence and cohabitation in the building's always been fantastic. When the Stolen Gem came along, for whatever reason, we were led to believe that there was nothing we could do about that, and so consequently we attempted to work very carefully, hand in hand, to make the events space work, and that has worked only because there have been very infrequent events there. So objecting tenants, and every other tenant in the building does object to this public bar, are not really trying to interfere with their current business practice of level 8, the Stolen Gem. But I think it is very important that it is noted that this is a terrific expansion of the operation of level 8. At most, they would have been holding one event a fortnight, sometimes much less, occasionally more. So to put in a public bar is actually a really radical expansion of their business, and consequently, the rest of the tenants are very motivated to defend our businesses against the consequences of that. Looking at the venue management plan, it would effectively mean that the Stolen Gem would take over the running of the common areas of the building. I don't think there's any other way to really see it. They would take over the business frontage, the front door access, the foyer areas, and the lift. Now, that's not workable in anyone's business. And at any time of day, let alone when other businesses are all also operating at their peak, and that would be from 5 till 8 in the evening, as many of the businesses in this building operate evening classes and training sessions. That kind of a situation can only cause damage to our businesses and our reputations. And I'm sure I don't have to say it, we're all suffering and trying to pick ourselves up after COVID-19 like everybody else. I'd also just like to quickly say that I actually wish I could wish the Stolen Gem every success, but unfortunately, if they are successful at running a public bar there and their social media marketing campaign kicks in, then the crowds are going to come teeming down Bourke Street at happy hour, and other businesses in the building are genuinely going to suffer. As its popularity increases, the more each of the various safety and security risks that have been mentioned really do become a disaster waiting to happen. So it would be great if we could avoid having to go and take further legal action, and I really appeal, councillors, to you tonight to reject this application for a public bar in this building. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Wendy, for your contribution to this debate. I now call on Ben Williamson to speak for no more than 3 minutes. Welcome, Ben.
Deputy Lord Mayor, it's Beck here from Council Business. Ben has not joined the meeting unless he is on the line with one of our other speakers.
Okay, thank you for that. Well, then we'll move on, and I will now call on Mitchell Belden from Plan Urban to speak for no more than 3 minutes. Welcome, Mitchell.
Thank you, Deputy Lord Mayor and councillors. Firstly, I'd just like to thank the council and the officers for all their work during the processing of this application. In terms of the planning, it's firstly imperative to recognise that pursuant to Clause 5227 of the Melbourne Planning Scheme, the sale of liquor itself does not trigger the requirements for a planning permit within the capital city zone. Uses such as private event spaces, not dissimilar to the current operation on site, are exempt from the requirements of a planning permit. And something similar could be said about a restaurant, which doesn't trigger a use permit, and subsequently the alcohol component of that would not trigger a use permit. Trigger a permit either. Proposal is purely for the use being a bar rather than for the sale and consumption of liquor, and this forms the only permit trigger. The local planning policy framework provides guidance for new uses inclusive of licensed premises. The scheme specifically encourages a variety of uses which will complement the diversity sought within the capital city zone. In terms of clause 22.22, that's relation to the licensed premises policy. This is of most importance in this instance, given it deals directly with bars and taverns. Of note is that the policy identifies Melbourne City as a 24-hour city, with uses such as bars being compatible with the strategic directions sought. Within the policy, the following is stated. Taverns, hotels and nightclubs which accommodate less than 100 patrons and which have appropriate noise attenuation will be encouraged throughout the capital city zone and dockland zone. Our proposal accords with the above, having hours limited to 1 a.m. on Friday and Saturday evenings and 12 a.m. for all other days. Given our capacity is 100 patrons, this type of licensed establishment is specifically encouraged within the Melbourne Planning Scheme. Amenity impacts have been dealt with via the inclusion of an external... by the inclusion of an extremely detailed event management plan, which we've worked alongside with council and the operator who speak next will provide some more details on. And appropriate conditions in terms of EPA requirements are also included on the permit, which will also ensure that the amenity of the people in the building are not compromised, nor is the surrounding area. In closing, I'd just like to state that this is a COVID-friendly space. Councillors, you spoke about the COVID-friendly spaces and the need to support these types of business in this uncertain time. And being entirely external pretty well in terms of its floor area, this is obviously an appropriate area to make use of such an establishment. The space is existing, and whilst being only for private events now, by making this space available to the public will provide more flexibility for the operator and further improve the diverse nightlife that Melbourne is highly regarded for. And I thank you for giving me the time today. Thank you.
Ladies. Thank you, Mitchell. I now call on Matt Newman from One by One to speak for no more than 3 minutes. Welcome, Matt.
Thank you, Deputy Lord Mayor. Good evening, everyone. I'm the director of the Stolen Gem, the rooftop venue on Level 8, 388 Bourke Street, Melbourne, that has run as a private event venue for the last 2.5 years. I also run another public venue and cocktail bar in the eastern suburbs of Melbourne. We are applying for this permit in order to have the flexibility to open to the public in 2021 and beyond. Due to the current climate with COVID-19, we have been closed since March 19 this year. The uncertainty of restrictions and private event rules going forward means that this will allow our business to continue operating. The closure has been very difficult on our business and the team. We are hoping that opening to the general public with the care and professionalism that we have shown over the last 2 years will mean that we can continue to support our staff and our community. Whilst I am trying to be understanding of the objections we have received, I must admit I'm a little disappointed given our track record in working with other tenants of the building. I believe our management of the space and our approachability as a management team would mean that our fellow tenants would be confident in our exciting new business opportunity. This application process has been very thorough, and our hard work has earned the support of the following people and organisations. The building owner. The building owner, who owns every level of the building, is in favour of letting us apply for this permit. They can see the amount of effort and funds we have already spent on the venue and we want to maintain a good relationship with our landlord for many years to come. The property manager, VCGLR, and the Victoria Police are also in support of this planning permit. We are yet to complete a sound engineer report on noise due to the working restrictions placed on Metro Melbourne over the last few months. As the restrictions are easing and life is returning to the CBD, we will complete the report and abide by the conditions outlined by council and the guidelines of the report. To be able to trade as a public venue is potentially life-changing for our business. The flexibility and opportunity it creates to be able to showcase our talents and service will mean that we can run long into the future and become a jewel of the Melbourne skyline and hospitality scene. I believe our management track record speaks for itself, with over 80 events to date without any major incidents or damage to the building and amenities. Furthermore, we haven't received any formal complaints from tenants or patrons, which speaks to the seriousness in which we approach this business. With all the time, effort, money we have put into the venue over the last 3 years, including this application, it would be a waste for myself and for my business to throw it all away with poor management. I have no intention of compromising my financial or business integrity. By adhering to the planning permit conditions and continuing our very high standard of operation, I believe we will become an iconic rooftop bar for Melbourne City to enjoy. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you very much, Matt, for your submission there this evening. Before we move to a motion and debate, I'm actually keen to call on our Senior Statutory Planning Officer, who actually Director of Planning and Building, Evan Council, to respond to those issues. A lot of those issues relate to how this business will operate, and many of the submissions say that is incongruous with the other activities going on in the building and not consistent with the Melbourne planning scheme. So I'd ask you to comment on that broadly, but also in particular some of the points that were made around amenity, fire access, safety issues, and so forth. Evan, please.
Thank you, Deputy Lord Mayor, and through you as Chair. I've done my best to summarise all the issues raised. If I miss anything, I'm happy to answer any specific questions as well. I'll start off with the issue of safety risk in an emergency related to the lifts and the stairs. This is predominantly a building matter and would form part of an occupancy permit and assessment by a building surveyor to ensure that those things are adequate for the operation within the building and doesn't form part of the planning assessment specifically. It happens after the planning process. There's a number of other issues which really turn to the operational management of the building and how this tenancy coexists with other tenancies within the building. Those matters really relate to the separation of users within the building and general safety matters. Property safety within each individual tenancy and the nature of access and restriction of access within the building. Also a duty of care to children and other users within the building, depending on the tenancies at the time, as well as the specific needs of other businesses and tenants within the building. All of these things really are outside the remit of the planning process. I do empathise with some of those real on-the-ground issues that are being raised. However, the planning framework exists to guide the nature of use within the city, and it's not there to deal with all matters. On those operational matters, I would note that this is a unique scenario where often we see these kinds of proposals not coming forth due to multiple ownership within a building like this that's multi-storey. And then outside of the planning process, there's owners' corporation rules, etc., that require ratification of various parties within a building. Here we have a single owner with multiple tenancies, so these matters really turn to the owner or the ownership entity as well as building management. There was a number of references made to things we can consider within the planning process as well as planning policy, namely the reference to the MSS and some of the content in there. The way the planning framework works is that there's state policy, local policy, which includes the MSS, then more detailed local policies, planning zones, which really relate to the land use, and other overlays which aren't so relevant to this proposal. Part of the MSS was referenced in relation to uses in conflict within local shopping and local retail precincts. It is of note that there's more detailed objectives and purpose and policy guidance within both clause 22.22, as well as the relevant zone being the capital city zone, where a more eclectic and mix of uses is welcomed and encouraged. But particularly, I just want to draw attention to a section of clause 22.22, which also refers to the MSS, talking about the municipality, especially the central city, is encouraged to develop as a 24-hour precinct with a range of activities, including licensed premises, which are supported. It then goes off on in that local policy to talk more specifically about the type of licensed premises which are actually encouraged within the capital city zone, being premises with up to 100 patrons and hours till 1 a.m. Within which the profile of this business does exist. That said, very important that the planning conditions and particularly the venue management plan are very stringent, and as far as they can go from a planning perspective, officers have worked with the applicant, our urban planners have worked with the applicant to make sure whatever measures we can put in there to address some of the issues raised as far as we can go are in there. Be cognizant that there is a use that exists at this site that is similar, albeit less intensive in terms of days of the week in nature to what's being proposed here tonight. There was also reference to council's plan. Council plan doesn't directly link to the planning consideration. It's an overarching document that guides council's vision and work program and feeds into work that leads to amendments to the Melbourne planning scheme. So whilst there's some very positive content in there, it doesn't directly guide the consideration of land use and development applications like the one we're considering this evening. There was also importantly issues raised in relation to the conduct and behaviour of patrons coming and going from the venue existing that are raising concerns about the proposed. To those matters, I would point out that, and in relation to broader alcohol abuse which was raised, there is a responsible service responsibility and accreditation that operators are required to hold, and council often works closely with the VCGLR and the police when some of the types of occurrences that were mentioned by submitters do occur. And I would encourage any of the occupants of the building to get in contact with council if they ever have any concerns about the enforcement or any activities that are happening on the site, and we'll always endeavour to assist where we can or point you in the direction of parties who can assist. But to summarise, for all intensive purposes, as much as I do empathise with some of the issues that are raised, we do need to consider the planning policy context here. And as far as it can go, it has restricted the use and included provisions within the conditions of the venue management plan to address, as far as practical, the issues that have been raised. But there are some issues which turn to the operational management of the building where council, from a planning perspective, can't delve into those matters, and we haven't been able to address those through this process. I'm happy to take any questions.
Are there any further questions for Evan Council? Councillor Leppard.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Evan. I am interested not so much in whether a permit should issue. You've made a compelling case. I'm interested in how we as a responsible authority should exercise discretion on applying conditions, and I'm looking particularly at clause 22.22, our policy for licensed premises that require a planning permit. Sorry, colleagues. So in particular,
applications to extend operating hours beyond the hours otherwise specified for indoor and outdoor areas within this policy will only be supported where the further extension of hours will not unreasonably impact on the amenity of the surrounding area. And for capital city zone, outdoor areas, including rooftops, should not be occupied past 1 a.m. Fine. And in noise-sensitive areas, alcohol should not be consumed in those areas past 11 p.m. Now, there's no definition of noise-sensitive area, and there being no other definition of any other type, I'm assuming all areas are noise-sensitive areas until a case has been made that they're not, but tell me if that's wrong. My question is this. On page 18 of the delegate report, your delegate is arguing that the amplified music will cease by 11 p.m. and that those measures would balance policy and amenity impacts on nearby residents, and so all other activities should continue till 1 a.m. But you haven't made the case for allowing the service and consumption of alcohol between 11 p.m. and 1 a.m. Can you please expand on this issue, and particularly why alcohol should continue to be consumed between 11 p.m. and 1 a.m. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Leppett. In relation to the noise-sensitive use question, typically when we talk about noise-sensitive uses in a central city or commercial area or mixed-use area, we're turning our mind to residential-type uses. Conflict can exist between businesses in terms of noise. Generally, within the central city and other mixed-use areas, we do see the more typical 9 to 5 hours and then the more active entertainment and food and beverage type uses then turn over into the later parts of the evening. But for noise-sensitive uses, that typically turns to residential. With regard to the question around the difference between restricting the hours of operation for the land use versus restricting the hours for consumption and service of alcohol, as the applicant pointed out, planning policy in the particular provisions of the planning scheme at clause 52 specifies that a planning permit's not required for the sale and consumption of alcohol within the central city zone, the capital city zone. So therefore, through the planning permit process, we're not lawfully able to restrict the hours for service of alcohol. What a permit is required for is the land use itself. So council can apply restricted hours or control the hours that the land use can occur on the site.
Thank you. Follow up, Chair. And that's, yep, I suppose, what I'm getting to, that very issue, and whether or not we'd be foolish to go down that road. But if I can follow on the noise-sensitive area issue, this area is next to a large flat bitumen car park, which is very, which noise bounces, and the amplification of noise in the local area is quite problematic. And there are actually a reasonably large number of residences in the local area. They just don't happen to immediately abut the premises. Is there? Would it be wise or unwise to grant a permit for the use up to 11 p.m. and see whether there's and see if the situation is okay, and then allow in a couple of years' time if the situation's fine to then look at an extension to that, an amendment to that permit, knowing that if we were to allow a 1 a.m. permit, you can't put the genie back in the bottle. Are you allowed? Can you discuss this issue for me, please? Thank you.
Yes, of course. Thanks, Councillor Leppett. Council is required to consider the proposal that's before it, which is for the hours specified. It is usual practice that we would require an acoustic report by a suitably qualified engineer as part of the application documents. Due to current challenges to conducting well, there's two elements to this specific application. There's the challenges in conducting any of those testings adequately at this point in time due to restrictions. There's also the fact that there's been a similar use occurring at the site on a less frequent basis, but at a similar intensity for some time. So the noise issue has been there in a less intense way in terms of the frequency of it, but in terms of the intensity of it, it existed through the already permitted use, which is now proposing to shift. But the unpredictable nature of how noise can act in the central city in terms of bouncing and deflecting off other surfaces is the exact reason why noise testing and acoustic testing is required. It's also why through our planning permit conditions, our practice is to include a permit condition where with just cause at any time, council can require the applicant to do further acoustic testing and any measures required by that acoustic testing to bring a venue into compliance must be carried out at the cost of the applicant. So we're confident that through the parameters we put in the planning process, there should be enough confidence to progress. The conditions within this specific recommendation ensure that before the use commences, an acoustic report is completed. If there's anything in that acoustic report which must be implemented, that even no matter how intensive the requirements are, they must be done to ensure compliance before it starts operating. And then if it does operate and there's anything that could not have been conceivably or reasonably tested until the venue is actually operating, we can follow up if there are complaints and require further testing to be done and further action to be taken to ameliorate any of those impacts.
No further questions, Councillor. But any other questions for Evan Council from councillors? All right. Well, look, in light of the submissions this evening and the responses from Evan Council, I want to put an alternative motion before councillors, and I direct you to the screen. And I am looking for a councillor to second that. Thank you, Councillor Leppett. And I'll now speak briefly in favour of the alternative resolution that is before us. Can I begin by thanking very, very much the submitters that we heard this evening? 388 Bourke Street is not just a fantastic building in Melbourne. It's a building that is full of fantastic businesses. And reading all of your submissions, as I did, it was great to read about the mix of retail, commercial, education, personal services, recreation and other activities happening in this building. And as a councillor who's thinking a lot at the moment about how we bring Melbourne back, it was quite inspiring to be reminded of how many fantastic businesses there are out there, and to know that as a city, we want to really work with you all and help help you and our city come back. It's got to be said, this is a really, really hard application for us to consider as councillors. And look, this is a kind of, in some respects, an unusual application. The property 388 Bourke Street is not covered by a strata title arrangement and a body corporate governance structure. It's a building which is owned by a single landlord, and the people we've heard from tonight, except with one exception, with a couple of exceptions, are basically the tenants of this landlord. And so that sets up effectively a set of commercial arrangements which are really beyond the remit of us as councillors to consider, and those arrangements are beyond our jobs. Our job this evening is to consider whether or not this application complies with the planning laws and regulations that govern our city. Is it consistent with them, and what other conditions could council consider to try and make this as agreeable as possible, if you like? And I think the alternative motion that is before us can do that. I want to stress that there are a number of conditions that are contained in the officer's report, and we're going to add to those with the motion we've got this evening. There is, of course, a waste management plan that is required of this proposal. There is an acoustic report which will be forthcoming, and I will stress to the tenants that the City of Melbourne is very vigilant in ensuring that acoustic reports and acoustic limitations that we apply to developments are enforced. There are requirements around the cessation of music, around hours of operation. There is bottle removal times and some further detail around that in the alternative resolution before us. There is requirements around things like a leave quietly sign. There are requirements around patron numbers. Of course, the application here for a rooftop bar replaces an existing function centre or events centre that has a limit of 100 patrons, and there's no proposal for us to change that. There are conditions here around hours of operation, and very, very importantly, there's a venue management plan, which I think contains some very important restrictions around the operation of this venue, which I believe will ultimately, on balance, mean that amenity issues can be properly managed. But at the end of the day, we of the City of Melbourne will do everything we can to ensure that those requirements are complied with. We've got an alternative resolution here which requests that management arrange for two proactive inspections of the premises within the first month to ensure that the applicant is complying with conditions. And I can tell those who have submitted to us tonight that that will be something that will be ongoing. And we've heard from Matt Newman, the proponent and the bar operator, and we've heard him tell us that he wants to effectively operate his bar because he needs to do that in order to have a viable ongoing business. And, of course, I think all councillors would encourage him to very much work with his neighbours, because if he doesn't, then it's ultimately going to be to the great cost of his own business. So with those requirements that I've gone through, I am happy to endorse the alternative resolution. Councillor Leppett.
Thank you, Chair. Can I just ask, while we're at the moving and seconding stage of 12.3, you intend that to be the first month or the first 3 months, or is that only the other matter?
Thank you for picking that up. Yeah, well, let's actually make that the first 3 months for this venue as well, so that it's not just something that occurs first month. So we're now considering an amended resolution.
Thank you, Chair. I'll support this motion, difficult though it is. Evan, this is our first meeting back. You're trying to kill us. Look, this is difficult, but it's important that we consider this properly. And even though it's a really difficult one, I appreciate the work that's gone into it and the work of the applicants in what is a vexed issue. And I acknowledge the sheer number of objections. And whilst I don't like that this is the first difficult planning application at the first meeting, this is our job, so let's do it. Now, I don't know about you, Chair, but when I've had a few, I forget what volume I'm speaking at, and this is why I'm asking about the service of alcohol after 11 p.m. Now, I don't have the legal background to know how strong the case we can make is to push through a really strong interpretation of our local policy, despite what the particular provision says, but this goes to the heart of the issue of what is reasonable noise, because I think that the use is going to be supported. This is the capital city zone. This is right smack bang in the middle of the city, and all of the land use controls and the policy about what we have as eclectic uses in the middle of the city says that a bar is suitable here, even though there aren't any other bars in this stretch of Bourke Street, as our objectors have pointed out. I think the use is generally supported. The question is what conditions are reasonable to place on the permit. It's a complicated issue, and a lot will ride on that acoustic report, I think.
Obviously, the planning enforcement team has a task ahead of it. The only overarching point I'll make is that the applicant has heard the concerns of the objectors and how significant this issue is and how seriously the local community takes this issue. I am sure that for the interests of good business and the recovery of the city, it is in the applicant's best interest to ensure that that acoustic report and all of the conditions of this planning permit, once it's operational, are adhered to, so that this bar is a good citizen in the city of Melbourne, in the heart of the city, and we don't see the sorts of fears realised that some of the objectors have spoken about. However, the concerns are very, very real, and the consideration before us today isn't whether or not we believe them. I certainly take them all on board myself, and this is a difficult decision, but we have to make a decision based on the particular provision, the policy and the zone, and we shouldn't be making a decision that tempts the tribunal in a way that potentially wastes our ratepayers' funds either. And so I think our planners have struck the right balance here, even though I'm very anxious about where it's been struck based on the information that's been provided at this meeting, and otherwise this is a balanced decision.
Thank you, Councillor Lippitt. Are there any other speakers for or against the motion? All right, I might just finally exercise my right of reply before putting the matter to the vote, and then again just thank all our submitters this evening, and say to those who were objecting that I very, very much understand the concerns that they've raised and empathise with them. Would I be happy about a rooftop bar being put at the top of my building in circumstances like this? The answer is probably not. But the question before us this evening is, does this application comply with the capital city zone schedule and the other planning overlays and regulations that apply? And I think the answer here on balance is that yes, that it does. I do just finally want to draw attention to an additional clause which I'm asking councillors to vote upon, and that is 12.2. And this is quite an unusual thing for us to do as a council, but we are actually requesting that management write to the owner of the building, the landlord, encouraging them to work with their tenants in an effort to resolve issues related to the operational management of the building in the interests of all tenancies. And I know that's something that Matt Newman as well, I think, would be very happy to see occurring, because it's in the interest of everyone in this building that we that you enjoy harmonious relations between yourselves. So on that note, I put the motion to councillors. All those in favour, please raise your hand. I'm declaring that carried unanimously. Thank you very much. I now call on Councillor Louis to assume the role of chair of the meeting in relation to the Prosperous City portfolio. Thank you, Councillor Louis.
Thank you, Deputy Lord Mayor. Let's get my breath back. These masks are deadly. There are two reports from management for consideration under the Prosperous portfolio. Agenda item 6.3, economic recovery to support the critical Christmas trade. Into the councillors like a presentation on this agenda item? No? In that case, I'll be happy to move this item if there's a seconder for it. Thank you, Councillor Chan. And if I can just briefly say a few words. Look, I normally try to start with something positive in terms of at least the first couple of statements. But if I can put this on record, this is already part of the first paragraph of the report. But these are frightening and scary figures. As the PwC report modelling shows, in terms of modelling for recession, the sharpest and deepest in 100 years. Projected 110 billion, not million, but billion cumulative reduction in the municipal output in the next 5 years. The ABS figures showing a 50% loss in jobs in the municipality since the pandemic. And the average, since the stage four lockdown, there's a reduction in retail spend of 85%, hospitality 95 to 97%. We're on a recovery stage at the moment. Those figures have improved, but not substantially. So I think in terms of the city of Melbourne, can I applaud and commend the chief executive, the general managers, our directors, and the many, many staff in NIFA that is putting this program together. We're at the pre-Christmas shopping and spending stage at the moment in November. If we don't get this right, or we don't throw everything, including the kitchen sink, at it, I don't think we'll get the traffic, pedestrian traffic back, which is very, very important for a capital city. Not just our retailers, our hospitality have all been screaming for action. I think the program together is citywide. It covers not only the CBD, but it's got Carlton, I think it's got Kensington, it's got North Melbourne, in terms of the little laneways strategy, also incorporated. It covers everything from our retail, in terms of Melbourne Fashion Week, Melbourne Music Week, our buskers strategy, but most importantly, the additional events like the creativity of laneways, urban blooms, to try and get everything we can to get the pedestrian and the traffic back into the city. So can I applaud all those officers, the management that's been working on it, and thank them for putting everything they can, and city of Melbourne, everything that's possible, budget-wise and infrastructure-wise into it. And I know it's been across council activities, right through from everything from events to engineering in terms of infrastructure, the parkades. Everything looks fantastic, and I'm looking for a great Christmas. Councillor Chen?
Thank you, Chair. Following the sentiments of the Chair, I'd like to thank the City of Melbourne officers and management as well for putting in place this motion. Being a business owner myself, I've suffered the devastation like many others in the City of Melbourne, and Christmas is the most important period for retailers and hospitality operators. So, Paul Zara from the Australian Retailers Association says that Christmas trading makes up 2/3 of our annual profits. I mean, I think 2020 business owners aren't talking about profits, they're just talking about survival. And having such activations like Shop the City and the Christmas Festival will really bring people back into the city. And that's what retailers and hospitality operators need right now. So thank you to the officers of the City of Melbourne for creating this lovely schedule of activations that can really bring people in from outside the City of Melbourne back into the city, so retailers can really trade again and really make the city vibrant that we all love and know Melbourne for. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Councillor Chang. Are there any further speakers to this item? No? In that case, can I just finish off by saying that the message here should be that the city is definitely open for business. We're going to be competitive. We've got all the strategies. The next two agenda items are all covering in terms of support on how we're throwing everything we can at getting the pedestrian traffic back, the spending community back into the city of Melbourne, as opposed to going to our suburban rivals. So, in that case, can I put the motion to the vote? All those in favour? I think she unanimously put pass. Thank you. Agenda item 6.4, COVID-19, the recovery and return of workers to the city, the CEO's pledge. any councillors like a presentation on this item? No. Can I ask for a mover, Lord Mayor? Thank you. And the seconder? Councillor Campbell, thank you. Would the mover like to say a few words?
Thanks, Councillor Louis. I'm delighted to be moving this motion this evening. I also want to thank all of our staff and our COVID recovery team more broadly for the work that they have done on progressing many initiatives, most of which will be absolutely crucial in reactivating our city. I am moving this motion this evening because there is a strong realisation that we need to get people back into our city safely and sooner, and particularly workers, and the CEO pledge will be an important factor in encouraging the return of office workers back into the City of Melbourne safely. City workers and students provide so much life and energy to our city. They are a pulse and a lifeblood to our city economy, and we are really missing all of those factors in our city at the moment. We know that our city workers used to make up half of our city's daily population, and that in October, only 8% of our city CBD offices were occupied. Our daily population levels, we have seen some increases more recently, which we are delighted about, but our data shows us that we are still a city that is 70% quieter than usual, and a big chunk of that are our city workers who are still in a stay-at-home mode. Workers, as I said, are absolutely vital for our city economy. When we think of, as Councillor Louis mentioned in the previous item, our $104 billion gross local product annually, a big proportion of that, a majority of that, is generated through our city workers coming in and out of our CBD, Docklands and other areas such as Parkville Precinct, universities, etc., every single day. And the impact, not just on our gross local product, but on the tens of thousands of jobs that are dependent on those people coming in and out of our city every day, is estimated to cost us $110 billion over the next 5 years as a worst case scenario. And the impact on employment or unemployment is again significant. Of course, none of us want that worst case scenario realised, and that's why efforts such as the CEO Return to Work Pledge are so important. There are essential elements that have been identified by experts and indeed by many workers in their surveys with their employers for being able to come back, and they include elements such as the cleanliness and safety of our public transport system, having a COVID safe and clean city, and workplaces that are arranged particularly for to provide a COVID safe workplace. We, of course, don't expect 100% of workers to come back on day one. It's unrealistic and it's unsafe. And so much of the work that's been done and the conversations had in developing towards a CEO pledge are about coordinating staggered days, staggered start times, and ensuring an orderly and safe return for workers. It's in everybody's best interest to see that happen. The City of Melbourne, as a major employer in the city, is also engaged in work to understand how we can facilitate a return, a safe return for our workers, and considering all of these aspects, and prepared to play a leadership role as it is safe for workers to return, and doing that in a very empathetic and making sure that COVID-safe priorities remain at the top of our list. The key to avoiding the worst-case scenario, but the key to enlivening and reactivating not just our city economy, but the way that our community functions and our culture is expressed, is to be able to facilitate returning workers as quickly, as safely as possible. I believe that the CEO pledge, amongst other initiatives in this motion, are key to that, and for those reasons, I'm happy to move this motion this evening. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Lord Mayor. Would the seconder like to say a few words? Councillor Campbell.
Thank you, Chair. I too would like to express my thanks to our staff and the COVID recovery team who've done very important work under very difficult conditions. I strongly commend the motion and very happy to second it, and in particular wish to speak to item 15.4, that we request management explore a voucher program to support hospitality, retail and entertainment businesses. During the stage four lockdown, daily entertainment spending, including hospitality, dropped dramatically to between 95 to 97% lower than the equivalent time in the previous year. Since the easing of restrictions, daily spending in the city has increased, but it is still between 30 to 50% lower than the equivalent time in the previous year. This position is simply untenable. Measures have been introduced in other jurisdictions to provide much needed support to hospitality venues to counter the impacts of COVID restrictions. Voucher schemes have been implemented, including a $4 million scheme in South Australia. In the UK, the Eat Out to Help Out scheme resulted in some 100 million meals being served. And most recently, New South Wales has indicated it is implementing a voucher scheme to be launched next month, initially just in the Sydney CBD. In Victoria, we've now seen an easing of restrictions around restaurant dining and retail in a COVID-safe manner. And it is vital that those business owners who have struggled under restrictions are thrown a lifeline as our city reopens. Hospitality in particular is a sector that has been on its knees due to COVID, yet it's at the heart of our city's vibrant culture. A voucher program will provide a much-needed incentive to visit city venues and provide a draw card to those Melburnians who live outside the city to spend their dining and entertainment dollars within the City of Melbourne. It will provide an essential boost to hospitality venues across the city, many of which saw a surge in customers immediately upon the easing of restrictions, but to survive, need to ensure ongoing patronage as we recover from the economic impacts of COVID restrictions. In exploring a voucher program, I would encourage consideration to be given to the most effective way to provide meaningful assistance to the city's businesses, including whether the scheme should be limited to restaurants and cafes, and the most successful elements of voucher programs introduced in other jurisdictions. Our hospitality business owners, like all Melburnians, have made incredible sacrifices to ensure an outstanding public health outcome in response to COVID. It is vital we now provide them with the support they need to remain viable. They are an essential part of the fabric of this city, and their survival is critical if Melbourne is to emerge again as a vital, thriving city in a post-COVID world. For these reasons, and those expressed by the Lord Mayor, I'm very proud to second this motion. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Councillor Campbell. Are there any further speakers to this motion? Councillor Liu, thank you.
Thank you, Chair, and I'll be very quick. I just wanted to call out and thank the leadership of Ross McEwen, NAB CEO, for actually leading, being the first to actually call that, because NAB is one of the biggest employers, and for him to actually do that is a very welcoming sign and also trust in the city. I also want to note that while, yes, I think it's great to have the CEO, but also I also note that given that Melbourne is a very educational state and city, that we should also try to explore extending that to many of the vice chancellors and of the educational institutes, which is bringing the students back, because I think that is going to be one of the key drivers for Melbourne. Melbourne has a lot of international students that are currently stuck or unable to come back, and that's something that we should really try to help the territorial institutions to get them back. I really like the idea of the vouchers. We've seen that work at the with when we supported the international students. So I would only comment that if we are going with vouchers more and more in the future, let's look at how we can digitise and also to make that a more better way rather than a piece of paper which you could lose. But also it's the amount of data that you can actually, I guess, get from that, because, you know, we could tell which shop they're going to, the buying habits, you know, do we need more around fresh produce or, you know, things like that. So exploring a more digital vouchers would be a great way forward, and it's in line with Melbourne has a kind of a innovative city that we're pushing for. And finally, if we can get the Premier to sign to also get the pledge, that would be a great deal. But I highly doubt that. Thank you, Lord Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor Luke. Are there any further speakers for this motion? No? Then in that case, could I put the motion to a vote? All those in favour, please raise your hands. It is unanimously is carried. Thank you. Can I now call on Councillor Leppert to assume the role of chair of the meeting in relation to the transport portfolio? Councillor Leppert, please.
Thank you, Councillor Louie. There is one report from management for consideration under the transport portfolio, and that is agenda item 6.5, COVID-19 recovery, importance of transport options. Would councillors like a presentation on this agenda item? No. Okay, I will call on a councillor to move a motion. I'll call on Councillor Lu to move a motion. Is this the motion?
Pardon me, Councillor. This is Beck from Council Business. Is this the moment where we take speakers to this item?
Yes. I'm looking at my script and it's not on there, but if we have speakers, can you please prompt me?
I do apologise. Stuart Norman, CEO of Parking Australia, is a late addition to our agenda.
Okay. Apologies to Stuart, and thank you, Beck. Stuart, welcome to Virtual Town Hall. Sorry for nearly gazumping you there. You have up to 3 minutes to address the Future Melbourne Committee. Take it away. Thank you.
No problem, Councillor Lippert. And thank you, Council, and congratulations to all of you on being newly elected councillors of the City of Melbourne. I would like to address three of the recommendations that the City that were tabled for the City of Melbourne. The first one is regarding 16.2, and we would like to congratulate the Council for engaging with the Victorian Government and other key stakeholders, including Parking Australia, which has seen the State Government provide the car park owners and operators with a 25% waiver for the 2020 calendar year from the congestion levy. And we think the Council have been great in engaging with us around this. And we would also support further relief regarding the congestion levy as stated in the recommendations. And we would commend and to offer any of our support that we can help in that issue. But to this end, we think that, that's a short-term measure, and we would like the City of Melbourne to consider just a couple of further aspects. And given that they've stated the traffic levels have amounted to 84% of pre-COVID levels, yet off-street parking is at best maybe to one-third capacity, it's clearly the current situation that there is no link between congestion, or sorry, the link between congestion and parking is actually not linear. So in addition to this, we think it's clear that the levy is ineffective and actually inequitable. And to that end, we think that the City of Melbourne are in an ideal place to not only offer short-term suggestions and lobbying and advocacy to the state government, but also to help engage in the development of policies around congestion in the long term. Now, this may be in terms of offering policy suggestions about offering congestion levy for people with more than one occupant in a car, which we think is totally makes sense. And also maybe around people getting in before 7 o'clock. So that's along the congestion levy. When it comes to 16.3, Parking Australia totally understand the end goal of encouraging people to come into the city, but we would like to consult with the City of Melbourne around how this may involve off-street parking as well, because there is obviously a limited capacity to on-street. And then lastly, when it's 16.4, which is talking about endorses management to commence discussions with the car park operators around reduced fees, happy to have that consultation as an industry, but we also think that the Property Council of Australia and its members who actually own the car parks should be involved in a forum and a round table around car parking levies and fees within the City of Melbourne. And I've just made it within my 3 minutes, so thank you very much.
Very well done indeed. Thank you very much. Are there any questions for our submitter? No, thank you. We'll move back to that motion. Councillor Liu has moved the motion on the screen, is that correct?
I'd like to move amendment one, yes.
Wonderful. Is there a seconder for that motion? Councillor Griffiths, thank you very much. Councillor Li Lu, please take it away.
Thank you, Councillor Opert, and very happy to support this, and thank you to Councillor Griffiths for seconding it. It is another great way to the theme of today, which is bringing people back into the city and incentives, and that's going to be a big part of what we do in the next 4 years. Just wanted to go through the amended changes and 16.1. Look, we added strongly endorses the management to work closely with the DOT to promote the safe use, mainly because we have a transport strategy that we have adopted pre-COVID and is still the one that we are going to be using as our preferred, policy stance. And again, just want to reiterate that this is kind of a more temporary measure to help our struggling business in the city. 16.2, we've put it in there. I've made the change in there with a minimum of 25, and I think we could go potentially more. So we want to give the CEO the opportunity to even tackle that. Where we get to that, I think that's up to Justin and his team, and hopefully we can get a really good outcome from that. 16.3, that's more in recognition of the fact that the Christmas campaign and also the New Year campaign is going to be what is, the sugar hit that we need for the city to get back on its feet. And so as a result, we would be very keen to get information back ASAP of how we can implement that in these times, because we do not want to lose any of that to, as Councillor Louis said, suburban neighbours and competitors, healthy competitors. Because on the weekend I definitely was really, how should I say it, envious of the amount of people that was going there and visiting and buying things from there. And finally, to the same point, Stuart at Parking Australia, we want to work with industry groups such as that, and also from retail and hospitality industry groups where they have provided a lot of input on this particular thing. So, and also it ties up very nicely with the previous two motions where, yes, we have campaigns running in the city, but we also want to encourage people to say, well, look, how are you going to get here? And obviously public transport is our preferred method, but we also want to ensure that there are people know all the options that is available to them so that we can do all the things we need to do. I'm also quite keen to see how we can link this with incentives going forward. So it's not just we just give out money, but rather what can we incentivize people to come into the city and to buy and also to visit. And finally, I'll just finish off by saying, again, it's a theme of me, technology and apps. There's been great apps going. For example, I use ParkHound. It's an app that you can actually find paid parking around you that you can actually utilize. So there are many, many options we can use, and technology is one that we can enable to get more people back into the city. So thank you, Councillor Lippert.
Thank you. Councillor Griffiths.
Thank you, Chair. Certainly I'd like to say at the very outset that I think it's fantastic that the first item in this motion is in relation to public transport, and echo what Councillor Layu said in regards to that. I catch public transport into the city every day. It's been fantastic to see the efforts of the public transport networks to encourage people and to do their best to create a safe environment and the perception of a safe environment in those areas. It's also been fantastic to see, I think one of the first briefings that we had on coming into council was of the important work that's been done to encourage cycling to occur in the city, and acknowledge the work of the previous council and of council staff to make that happen. There's been some fantastic initiatives in that regard. Having said both those things, I think it's important to acknowledge at the moment there are people who, for varying reasons, don't feel safe using those modes of transport to come into the city, and that it's an important time to make sure that people who want to come into the city to support businesses feel that they're able to come into the city to support businesses. Also like to add that I've spoken to many people in the hospitality industry in recent weeks, not just the owners of hospitality venues, but the workers in hospitality venues. Those workers are amongst some of the most economically stressed, and for that matter, mentally stressed workers in the state at the moment, and not all of them feel confident riding or catching public transport into the city. And I think it's important that they know that we as a council are doing all that we can to create a safe and welcoming environment for them in their travels to the city, and in turn that the business owners who rely on those staff feel confident that we're doing all that we can to encourage those staff to return. We've already passed a couple of motions tonight acknowledging that it's a critical time, and I guess it's sort of the old saying of extraordinary times call for extraordinary measures. I do think that some of the things that we're moving in this motion are extraordinary, but it's the right time to do so, and I endorse the motion.
Thank you, Councillor Griffiths. Are there other contributions to the debate? Councillor Ball.
Thank you, Chair. I would like to contribute to the debate by reading an email that all councillors received this morning from a member of the public, if I may, somewhat abbreviated. She writes, I was horrified to read in The Age about a proposal to reduce parking fees and congestion charges in the city. As a city worker who was locked down and now has been temporarily driving into work due to COVID, on the face of it, I would be someone who could benefit. But this knee-jerk reaction is short-sighted and unlikely to help. The minimal extra people it might bring in, that is, the people who would not have driven and parked at price X, but who will park and drive at price Y, will be far outweighed by the detrimental effects of increasing congestion and encouraging driving into the city. Most likely, it will be the same people coming in, just paying slightly less for parking. Longer term, to encourage people back into the city, the cost of parking is not the issue. Pre-pandemic, we know that the real aim is to get people in safely with public transport and cycling, saving driving for those who have a genuine need and reason, such as tradespeople and people with disability. Reducing congestion charges and parking fees sounds like a quick fix and may reassure people that we are doing something to help business. But really helping business and the workers who support those businesses involves sensible and sustainable long-term planning. It would be very disappointing if some of the first actions of the new council are to wind back hard-fought cultural change. I am both a driver and public transport user. I support a system which recognises the real costs and harms of congestion in the city. Indeed, the proposal hardly even makes sense in the short term, given the delightful way parking has been taken over for outside dining and entertainment. As these parklets and similar initiatives show, the city should be for people, not cars. Regards, Stella Gold. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Councillor Ball. Are there other contributions to the debates? Lord Mayor.
Thank you. And I too read the submissions from so many people on this topic, and lots of social media comment. And I think it's really important that we're talking not about an or here in terms of choosing or prioritising one form of transport over another. It's really an and discussion to make sure that all transport options are viable for people as we come out of a pandemic. I think that is the other relevant point for me, is that we have been in an extraordinary situation, one that has not been experienced before. And as a city and as a community, we need to be considering all options, some of which will work and some may not. But certainly at the moment, many are worth trying as we try to revitalise our city economy and revitalise also our city community. And certainly a lot of the feedback that we have been receiving is that we need to do for our small business owners in the city everything that we can do to overcome any barriers, real or perceived, to people choosing to come into the city for their work, for their dining, for their shopping, for their entertainment. I take on Stella as somebody who represents many of the views that came in as submissions, lamenting about the hard-fought position which is represented in our transport strategy, of which I am one of the big supporters and proponents of that work and the outcomes that we are seeking and the long-term outcomes we are seeking. This motion is about a short-term response to reviving our city, and I think it is sensible and important that we look at the lever that is driving and we do everything we can to accommodate people that need to choose that option in the short term, and we want those people to come back into the city. So for that reason, I am supporting this motion tonight and just recognising that there are many elements and initiatives that we are taking in the short term to revitalise this city and that we can still manage our longer term outcomes that we seek across those transport options. Thanks.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. I note that there are multiple parts of this motion, and I think I will suggest at the end that we take two different votes, but I'll wait for the debate to see where that should sit. This issue has been discussed, but I might jump in here now as well and acknowledge that transport strategy, but also the unique times that we're in. All times are unique, I've got to stop using that phrase. A week and a half ago, the Planning Institute of Australia, Victoria, awarded our Transport Strategy 2030 with one of its highest awards, the Best Planning Ideas for Large Projects, beating out many other contenders, including some by the state government. It was a hard-won strategy and an astonishing achievement, and our transport planners do us absolutely proud. It was a incredible shift in policy at the City of Melbourne, and it acknowledged a few difficult truths. One is that road space in the central city is finite, and therefore on-street parking is finite, and it measured and observed the effect of free or reduced parking fees on inducing congestion, especially if you've got drivers. The example is if you've got drivers doing blockies looking for car parks that are already full. And so my concern with the motion is ignoring that and looking to those short-term solutions that might induce that congestion on our local streets, even on a short-term basis over summer. There are parts of this motion that are excellent. Obviously, we need to work closely with the department to promote the safe use of public transport. We've all unanimously agreed to some other COVID recovery resolutions tonight about getting as many people as possible to return to the city. I think we all agree with that outcome. It's how we do it. I agree that we need to do more research around public perceptions on the return to the city. But of course, on parking, this is an issue that we might just have a few disagreements on, and that's fine as well. Off-street parking and on-street parking, different issues as well. And the economic times have changed. And on-street parking, whilst we're now back at pretty much capacity just under, we will be at capacity all throughout the day, you know, any day now. But off-street parking is still well below capacity. I think
the policy settings that the council has and the influence that we can bear on the private sector, these are discussions that we should have, of course. But throwing on-street parking into the mix and pretending that one of the options could be the reduction of fees to entice people back into the city as part of a broader package, I just believe is wrong-headed. Now, I know that we're going to review these and we'll have options come back to us in December if this motion is carried, probably December if this motion is carried, and we can have another look at it then, so I'm not going to overdo it here now. We do already know enough about the basic economics of supply and demand, about how much road space we've got, about how many car parks there are out there, to know that free on-street parking is a recipe for congestion. And when we've got parklets, when we've got outdoor dining, when we've got all of the other measures that we're trying to roll out in the middle of the city at the moment to make this city a people-centred city, that's not an option we should even be reviewing, let alone considering, let alone looking at again in December. So I don't support part three. I'm suggesting we excise the three parking parts for the sake of ease of the vote later on, but I'll keep listening to the debate as chair. I'm now muddying between chairing and speaking to the debate, but I can't support the section on on-street parking in particular, and I thank the many, many submitters to us who are railing against free parking, which is a very interesting thing for members of the public to do. Please don't give us free parking. But they understand the basic laws of economics, and I think we need to do that as well. Deputy Lord Mayor.
Thanks, Councillor Lippert. I want to also begin by acknowledging the huge amount of correspondence that councillors have received on this particular policy matter, and in my own case, including correspondence from my own father, who on behalf of people at the Victorian Transport Action Group, the gang at VTAG, I will acknowledge do not support this measure. The key thing for me in considering this action is that it is a temporary or temporarily amending on-street time parking time limits and fee arrangements. It's a short-term measure as part of a series of things that we are doing to throw everything we can at trying to rejuvenate, resuscitate the city economy. I want to say that it is a look. I myself, like many councillors, am very heavy user of public transport, very, very frequent cyclist, and it's a source of enormous pride to me that during the period of lockdown in Melbourne, while we were all in ISO, that the City of Melbourne got on rolling out, fast-tracking 40 kilometres of new separated cycling lanes across Melbourne. I believe those 40 kilometres, which address many of the key bottlenecks in our city in terms of our cycling network, will be a game changer in terms of lifting cycling activity when the city is up and going again. It's also a source of great pride for me that the City of Melbourne will be partnering with the Victorian Government in the rollout of a further 100 kilometres of cycling lanes around the inner city and surrounding areas. And those extra 100 kilometres of cycling lanes will deliver a safe, separated cycling lane 20-minute bike ride to more than a million Melburnians into the central city who cannot currently achieve that. That, again, will be a game-changer for how transport works in this city going forward, and will, I think, deliver a very, very substantial positive modal shift towards cycling, as I said, delivering a 20-minute cycling, safe cycling trip to the centre of the city for an additional 1 million residents of Greater Melbourne. But we've got to also acknowledge what's happening across Greater Melbourne at the moment. We are seeing people diverting to cars at the moment. We are seeing people driving those cars to major suburban shopping centres. You know, the Chadston car park is full. The Westfield shopping centre in Doncaster there has got people queuing up in their cars to get in. And the fact is they're attracted there by one of the reasons they're attracted there is, A, because they perceive driving in their car to be safe, and two, when they take into account the shopper discounts, it's effectively free for them to park there. And so here we are in the most economically depressed geographic region of Australia as a consequence of the COVID-19 virus. We cannot help but do everything we possibly can to throw everything we can at resuscitating our city economy. And, you know, after thinking about this long and hard, I think this temporary measure is something that I will support. How we'll feel about this in 3-4 years from now, I think history, it'll be interesting to know if you want to know the truth of it. I'm not here saying I'm 100% certain this is the right thing to do, but what I am saying is that based on what I know of the situation we're currently in, and given that it is a temporary measure, it's something that I'm prepared to support.
Thank you, Deputy Lord Mayor. Are there other contributions to this debate? Councillor Hakim.
Thank you, Councillor Leppard. I'd like to just, I guess, acknowledge this motion is about getting people here. How we've moved a number of motions that are about how we activate the city and how we bring people back to Melbourne. So how they come here is what we're talking about, and to ensure that they come here as a destination as we move into this period of COVID normal. I want to firstly acknowledge that there are a number of components in this, and the most important of which is the public transport safety and the reality that public transport is being delivered and run in a COVID-safe way. So that should be the first point. I know myself as well, I come into the city through public transport and have been doing so throughout this period. On-street and off-street parking are two separate issues, and I do have concerns around on-street parking not delivering on the intentions of the motion, but I do recognise that what we're asking for is options to review and evidence around what the impacts would be or what the impacts were as well during the period when we did have free parking during the lockdown. So that's critical, and I know that there are a number of people from the community who feel that this might be a way of achieving that. I do not necessarily agree, but I think it's important that we do look at the evidence and bring that forward. I do take into account, Councillor Leppard, the evidence that's been used in the transport plan, but feel in a way that it's this environment, from a temporary measure as well, it is worth putting those in clearly out in an options document as well, for the sake of ensuring that we put everything possible through this, I don't want to say unique, but unusual and I guess once in a lifetime circumstances. Thank you. That's
it. Thank you, Councillor Hakim. Other contributions to the debate? Councillor Campbell.
Thank you, Chair. I too want to thank the many people who took the time to write very carefully considered submissions, all of which I have read. And I too am a public transport user, but I appreciate that others in a post-COVID environment may prefer, at least temporarily, to drive. I'll be voting in favour of this motion because of the crisis facing our city's retailers, restaurant owners and other small businesses. Our city's retailers and small businesses are not operating on a level playing field. Customers have developed habits of online shopping over months of lockdown, and following the easing of restrictions, have been drawn to shopping centres that offer free parking that let them easily come in and out. If our city's retailers are to get their share of Christmas shopping dollars, we must use every lever at our disposal to level that playing field. The reality is that shoppers and diners simply will not look to Melbourne as a destination of choice to do their Christmas shopping or organise their Christmas catch-ups, and our city's small businesses need every one of those dollars. This is a temporary measure in unprecedented times, and we owe it to those businesses to do all we can to bring people back to the city. That's why I'll be voting in favour of this motion.
Thank you, Councillor Campbell. Other contributions to the debate before I go back to the mover? No. Having heard the debate, I think it's simplest if we split into two. So there's still one motion, but I'll put it in two parts. The first being that the Future Melbourne Committee paragraphs 16.1 and 16.5. The second, that the Future Melbourne Committee paragraphs 16.2, 3 and 4. And now I'll go back to you, Councillor Lee Liu, but hopefully that gives councillors enough time to understand very clearly what the two votes will be. And before we finish the debate, I'll just make sure everyone's very clear what we're about to do. But Councillor Lee Liu, to close the debate, thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to close off by just saying it is a temporary measurement. And I think it's at the heart of this is about choice. It's about options. And I thank all those submitters who've actually said that, you know, I am going to be sticking to public transport. And I think that's going to be great because, hopefully they can lead by example. But we have to also note that while there might be people who are confident and more than happy to take, different options, there are also those others who are not able to, and especially, for example, people maybe living in suburbs who are not able to. I know I've had dreadful experience with trains, so for me, it's about at the heart of this is about choice and the options that we're actually giving out. I also want to say that as all things, if there is something that has happened, we make adjustments. And I think this is what we're doing. Yes, I recognise that, the transport strategy, while there are parts of it at which my personal views is different, but nevertheless, I will always support it because it's what council have done and there's a lot of good research to it. But at the same time, we need to make adjustment as it is. For example, we never planned for COVID-19, right? And I think that is something that we also need to factor in, and we need to change the course throughout the period that where we need to justify. I don't see this as a kind of a permanent because I'm sure that's going to be a massive debate that we will have, but rather this is just a temporary measure which is giving people the option of what they want to choose and what they want to do. So and I appreciate everyone's feedback or debate into this because I think it's a very passionate issue. We've had this around QVM parking as well and all these other things. So we will always have debates about this, but I think it is the right choice to make, and that's why I'm more than happy to move this.
Thank you, Councillor Lee Liu. I'll put the motion in two parts. The first vote will be on the question that the Future Melbourne Committee 16.1 strongly endorses, etc., and 16.5 notes that management, etc. On the second vote, we'll get to the other three paragraphs. Is everyone comfortable? Thank you. I will now put that motion. All those in favour of that motion, please raise your hand. I declare that carried unanimously. I'll now put the motion that the Future Melbourne Committee 16.2 endorses the Chief Executive Officer, etc. 16.3 requests management to review, etc. And 16.4 endorses management to commence discussions, etc. All those in favour of that motion, please raise your hand. Doing such a good job that I only voted for it. Okay, we'll read the names. That's Lord Mayor Sally Capp, Deputy Lord Mayor Nicholas Rees, Councillor Doidge, Councillor Griffiths, Councillor Chang, Councillor Hakim, Councillor Campbell, Councillor Lu and Councillor Louie. All those against, that's Councillor Ball, Councillor Leppard. I declare the motion carried. I will now return the chair back to the Lord Mayor to chair the remainder of the meeting. Thank you.
Thanks, Councillor Leppard. This concludes reports from management to be considered this evening. There are no items of general business on our agenda this evening. That leaves me to ask councillors, are there any items of urgent business that you wanted considered this evening? None, thank you. Well, I advise the meeting just in relation to public questions, which we do, that there were only the four. We considered those at the start of the meeting. And so it's now for me to say thank you to everyone for attending, to our management team, to the members of the public, and a particular thank you to our councillors, particularly our new councillors, for all of the care and diligence they've taken in preparing for tonight's meeting and participating. It's been a really good first Future Melbourne Committee to get us going in this new term. And we're declaring the meeting closed at 7:54. And because it's here, we're going to do that. Thank you, everyone.